is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Behind the Black. Happy birthday, Bob Zimmerman. It's the February Zimmerman explanation for what we're about to hear, mostly commercial space, great success in social in space engineering. And Bob brings us this regularly, but each February and once again in the summertime, he asks for donations and your subscriptions to what we're about to learn about private moon, the private moon. This is something Bob pioneered many years ago. And the question at the time was there enough money? There's way enough money. Bob, a very good evening to you. We're on the eve of a landing. Who's landing and what does it mean?
Yes. Intuitive Machines, Odysseus Lunar Lander, it was formerly called Nova C. That's actually, I guess, its class vehicle, but they named this particular lander Odysseus. It was launched early a week ago. It has now inserted itself into lunar orbit. They're analyzing the orbit right now, and it has a planned lunar landing near the South Pole of the moon set for tomorrow afternoon. I've got on Behind the Black links to where you can watch it. I'll embed the live stream when it gets close on my own website, but you can go to NASA sites and listen there. Of course, you have to listen to their propaganda, but that's okay. This will be the closest vehicle ever to land near the South Pole. It won't be landing at the South Pole like Vikram Pragyan from India that landed nowhere near in the South Pole regions, but not near. And this is going to be landing near it. What makes it significant, it's a privately built lander. It has NASA payloads on it. But the lander itself is going to try to do a soft landing privately built and financed. And their business plan, of course, is to provide landers for NASA as well as private industry that wants to go there. For example, one of their payloads is a privately funded mini telescope. And it's going to attempt to take while this spacecraft is on the ground for about 2 weeks before lunar night sets in. It's going to attempt to get good images from the moon of the Milky Way center of the galaxy. And so there's money to be made here. Absolutely. This will be the third, fourth private mission to try to land on the moon. Let's see. Israel had a nonprofit try to do it. Bereshit 1. Japan had its iSpace try to do it. They failed. Then Astrobotic, this is an American company. They tried only about a month ago, but they didn't get even to the landing. They had a problem right after launch. Although they got the spacecraft to work and to fly, it was not on a lunar course, so it never could try its landing. So this will be the first attempt. Private enterprise doing it all, and that's the way it should be done, John.
And Bob, monetizing robots on the moon, is that a direction that we're taking away from the manned landing?
No, this is all preliminary. I always used to joke about this. In the old days when they used to make the false argument that we shouldn't waste money on manned missions, we should do it all by robots, I used to joke, why should the robots have all the fun? Robots are merely scouting missions, and so this is a preliminary scouting mission. This mission isn't going to do that much research on the moon. They'll try to do some, but the main purpose of this mission is an engineering mission to test the landing capabilities, because Intuitive Machines has at least several other lunar landers on schedule to go, and they want to make sure that technology is working. But anything these landers find out is then applied to what we need to know to go on to bring people there. So no, it doesn't. It's not replacing manned. It's an addition to manned missions. They shouldn't have all the fun. They're just simply there to make it possible for us to have the fun.
Competition in space. What does it mean to Indonesia, Bob?
It means that SpaceX gets the business. SpaceX, in fact, this week launched the Indonesian communications satellite, and it appears, and I've got a link to that launch, but I've also got a separate link to an article that describes how SpaceX got that business. And the reason it got that business is because Indonesia generally was sending its space business and high-tech business. Getting that business is sending it to China. They were getting Chinese companies to do it for them, or they were having Chinese import it to them. They used a Chinese rocket to launch a previous Indonesian communication satellite. The launch failed. And so the government there decided to look around for alternatives. And after talking to SpaceX and Elon Musk and actually visiting Boca Chica, they decided not only to hire SpaceX to launch their satellites, but they opened the country to Starlink communications. And so this is just how competition works. You provide a good product that's reliable, that can be, that'll work at a low cost, and people will beat a path to your door. And that's what they've done at SpaceX.
It remains flabbergasting, Bob, that the recovery model, the ability to recover the first stage and bring it back down and reusable, that that was developed by NASA in the middle of the 20th century and not used, discarded. Is there ever been an explanation for why they did they talk about cost at the time?
The original reason for the space shuttle was reusability to reduce the cost. But it was a government program, so lowering cost and profit was never a fundamental motive. They could say they wanted to lower the cost, but unless you're working on a profit model where, you know, you can only spend so much because you've got to be able to sell to customers and therefore make a profit, costs are not going to really be a consideration. For example, the shuttle was really a prototype. And when you do a prototype, what do with a prototype? You fly it a few times, you figure out what's wrong with it, you redesign it and fly again. Well, that's not what NASA did. NASA used that prototype for almost 30 years. And, of course, as soon as the Challenger accident occurred, they suddenly realized, well, we should have been doing some research on foam. And maybe, I'm sorry, Challenger was a different problem. But when the Columbia crashed, they suddenly realized we have foam issues. Well, they should have been dealing with that 30 years earlier. So, yes, the reason is that government is the problem. They just don't have a profit motive, so they don't think in terms of lowering costs. They think of actually of excuses to raise the cost because that increases their budgets. So that's why reusability never really flew with government.
What is Firefly?
Firefly is one of the rocket startups that have come along in the last few years because we now let private enterprise do these kind of things. And it has a rocket called Alpha. It's launched it twice. On the second launch in December, it got its satellite into orbit, and the company, Lockheed Martin, that was running the satellite, was able to do the technology tests it wanted to do, but the orbit was a low orbit, and that meant the satellite came back to Earth much sooner than expected. And so Firefly has now completed its investigation of why that mission had a problem. Apparently, once the orbit was they reached orbit, it was in a elliptical orbit. When it reached its high point, the upper stage engine was supposed to fire again to circularize the orbit in a high position. It didn't fire, and the reason it didn't fire was issues of software. They say complicated issue question. It sounds like it's related to the attitude thrusters. Either they weren't working correctly, which meant either the ship was not in the right orientation, or because the attitude thrusters were not working properly. So it failed. They hope to do four more launches this year, John.
What is space perspective?
This is a slightly different space-related startup. Space Perspective is one of two high-altitude balloon companies in the United States that want to send tourists on long 6 to 9 hour flights up to 20 miles where you could see the curvature of the Earth. Space Perspective is building a capsule it's going to call Neptune. They've now introduced a test balloon capsule called Excelsior, which they're going to use for a program of 10 unmanned flights over the next year to prove out the system. And when that is completed, they hope to then begin next year tourist flights, or at least manned flights leading up to commercial tourist flights. They say they've got something like 1,600 people who have signed contracts or who have given deposits to do tourist flights here. And in fact, they have a wait list right now that so many people want to do this. So there's money to be made here, John, and they are definitely trying to make it.
We go off to Australia, equatorial launch in Australia, Gilmour Space. Is this new?
In a sense, it is, John. In a sense, it isn't. Gilmour Space has been around for a few years. They raised recently $36 million of private investment capital. That was on top of $46 million they had raised previously. They're an Australian rocket startup. They want to launch rockets. They have a rocket called Eris. They want to start launching it soon out of a spaceport called Bowen Spaceport. I've got a map of behind the black of that spaceport's location in Australia, plus a second spaceport in Australia called Equatorial Launch Australia. Now, what's interesting about this story is that Gilmour Space had announced they were hoping to launch in April of 23. That's almost a year ago. At that time, they said they were awaiting launch approvals from the regulatory agencies in Australia. We're now almost a year later, and they're still waiting approvals from the regulatory agencies in Australia. This is a bad sign. You know, Australia's legal system is based upon United Kingdom's. And we all know the problems that the companies have had in the UK with their spaceports and regulatory burdens. So we might be seeing a hint of that going on in Australia as well. We're going to have to wait and see.
Let's go to Spain, the Iberian Peninsula. Startup PLD. What is it? What is the mission?
PLD is like Gilmour Space. It's a rocket startup. It's done one test suborbital flight of its rocket. It has now earned a contract from the European Space Agency, not a big amount of money, a little over $1 million, to develop the deployment system for its orbital rocket that it hopes to launch in 25. What's significant about this is that the European Space Agency is very clearly no longer going to rely on its commercial company, Arianespace, as a monopoly. It's now giving contracts to independent other companies. And in fact, it really is beginning to look like it's going to abandon Arianespace entirely or let them hang out there and compete like everybody else has to. No more favoritism. That's a significant shift, and that does indicate that Europe is adopting capitalism in space, the idea that they should not be the builder of anything. The government should instead be the buyers of the product and let private enterprise provide the product and the services in a competitive atmosphere.
All right,
if that happens, Europe's going to go great, John.
The Indians have an upper stage. What's the significance?
This is the upper stage to their largest rocket. They have a variety of boring names. LVM is what they call it now. But the key about this upper stage is that they've now man-rated it for their manned mission, their Gaganyaan manned mission. They hope to launch that next year. Before they launch it, they're going to do four launch abort tests. One has already taken place. They're going to do three unmanned Gaganyaan missions using this rocket. The news is they've completed tests on that upper stage, and they now man-rated it, so it's now ready to go. They are moving forward, and they're going to put a person in space, I think, by next year.
All right. ISRO, PLD, Gilmour, and Firefly. Is everybody using reusability?
Oh, that's a good question. Everybody is talking about it. No one yet is doing it, but everyone is talking about it. PLD wants to have their first stage recovered with parachutes. Gilmour talks about the same thing. Yes, everybody is talking about it. So it's now everyone knows that if they don't do it, they're not going to be able to compete. And so they're all looking that way down the road.
And recover the fairing and recover everything that would continue to cut costs. The reason I emphasize it, Bob, is because it's so obvious to us here in 2024. And I'm trying to imagine what the mindset was back in the 20th century, not just NASA employees. I mean, people reading the documents from NASA saying, hey, what about this? I guess it just wasn't in the literature. Is that correct?
No, there was a closed-mindedness. Once again, when profit is not a motive, you don't even bother being innovative. And so government was running everything, and so there was no interest in being innovative. And private enterprise was cut out because government ran everything, and NASA didn't want its turf invaded. It wasn't until the last decade that government was finally NASA was finally convinced to start changing its ways and give private enterprise room. And they were it was forced up on them, mostly by Elon Musk and SpaceX. But once they've done it, they're now getting much more bang for the buck, and they're happy with the situation. And they're not the ones innovating, though. It is private enterprise who's doing the innovation.
Roscosmos has a number. What is it, Bob?
This is a fake number. If you believe this, I have a bridge I want to sell you. Roscosmos's head, Yuri Borisov, is claiming that they're going to launch 40 times in 2024. They haven't launched 40 times in a year since 94. And since SpaceX stole their international market, they have had trouble even getting to 20 launches a year, more likely 15. They're not going to do this. That's their promise. They're not going to do it.
Bob says over under, take the under. Bob Zimmerman, Behind the Black. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.